Hello and welcome to the September 23rd edition of the TMS Wiki's call-in discussion group. This week, as we've been doing in the past, we will be discussing Nicole Sachs LCSW's wonderful new TMS book, The Meaning of Truth. This week, we will be doing two chapters, chapters 8 and chapters 8.5, entitled respectively, How and How and a Half. We'll learn what those mean later. Before we start, though, I just do have to remind everyone, I think everybody knows this, but let me say it again, that this is a peer discussion group. If you have any sort of medical or mental health concern, you should see the appropriate licensed professional. If you have an immediate concern, obviously go to the emergency room. We're here to discuss a book, and we're just sharing our own advice as peers. Everybody is representing their own opinion and not the views of the TMS PPD Peer Network. With that out of the way, let's dive in. So I guess no one here has jumped directly to this chapter, but from what I gather, that might be tempting because we live in a very goal-directed society. Do you want to talk anything about that, Nicole? Let me read a passage that I thought was really excellent, that I loved and really intrigued me. It is right here. I actually ran it by my girlfriend because I am a very goal-directed person, Nicole.
Uh-huh. It says, most of TMS personalities are.
All right, good. In the world of your mind, heart, and soul, however, there is no such thing as an outcome, not really. Even if we postulate that results from psychotherapy are positive outcomes, which of course I support as I'm a psychotherapist, Nicole speaking here, there is a distinct difference between our world of tangible outcomes and the persistently better mental health of an individual in therapy. A person in therapy is on a journey. I'm highlighting this because I have seen so many people delay their journeys significantly by striving to be done or desperately wanting to be better. Since one's process is not outcome driven, these people will either subconsciously, consciously, or both feel like failures, similar to the whole hope debacle that was mentioned in a previous chapter. This will not do, so I say to you, my lovely human, please try not to equate growth in this process with any sort of outcome, or convince yourself that healing will resemble an arrival. So let me just say, I mean, normally I'm playing the facilitator here, but audience questions are great. So I'm going to play the audience member here and say, that's actually something that I personally have struggled with a lot. And I think when I've been to a lot of therapy, and I've done a bunch of therapy in my life, as you guys know, my mother died when I was 9. And so she actually asked me to go to therapy. So I have a very early experience of it. One thing which has really bugged me about it is that you would go into a therapy session and they would say, what do you want to talk about today? And I'd say, well, you're supposed to tell me that. And I was wondering if you could comment on that, because I guess, like I said, I am a very goal-directed person, and I know when I approach these types of things, I want to have a mission. I want to have objectives, things that I'm working on. So can you comment on that?
I certainly can. And actually, I think that's an excellent question. It's a very touchy, not touchy in terms of hurting people's feelings when I answer it. It's hard to put it into words. So bear with me as I try to answer it. I think that there's a distinct difference between a therapist giving advice or deciding how the therapy is going to work, you know, whereas, like you said, I want to go in and you tell me what to do. There's a very distinct, very fine line between that and being led on a journey where you're partnered with. And so one of the best quotes I've ever heard, and it's really just a funny one that a friend said to me once, is her therapist once said to her, this is like Home Depot. I can give you, I can give you all the tools, but if you're not wanting to do the work, it's just going to be a lot of wood and nails and, hammers. And so when you say that, you were looking for the therapist to tell you what to do, what I would imagine for us, especially if you're talking about when you were younger, is you were looking for the therapist to be with you and support you and guide you. Because I think that what most people need from therapy is two things. One is the acumen of the therapist, which is just the skill set and the education and the ability to see perhaps another person's life clearly when one can't see one's own life because it's too close to the vest. The other thing, though, that people look for in a therapist that maybe they know or they don't know is somebody who can make you feel like you're not alone in all of this. And to me, that is equally important to one's education and one's skill set. And that's what I write about a lot in the book, because when you came to sit down to a therapy session or anyone, you know, and if you feel as if for the first time in your life you're being heard, or for the first time in your life you feel like someone really gets it and they're sitting there alongside you, willing to help guide you, that's to me what is key in the whole therapy paradigm. You know, I think that a lot of, like, I have a teenage client who I saw today, and he definitely has come a long way, but he used to come in and sit down and be like, I hate everything. And then he would just stare at me like, now what do you have to say about that? And and I would, you know, I've been working with him since he was in eighth grade. Now he's in 10th, so he's come a long way. But I guess what I'm saying is that it's really much more about feeling like you're not alone, feeling like you can express yourself completely and not being outcome oriented. I guess what you're saying is you want something to work on. And if I were your therapist, what I would say is, let's talk about why you need that so badly.
Oh, yeah, that sounds very therapy, see. Okay, so...
But to be honest, even, you know, all joking aside, that is an important question, because outcomes only last for as long as they last, right? And then it's on to the next thing. It's much more helpful and much more helpful for TMS patients to know, why is it that I am so comforted by, you know, a file folder being complete? Like, you know, what is it that I'm striving to really connect with? And that's where the answers of the deeper truth really are revealed.
So, by the way, let me say, anyone is welcome to jump right in. We have almost all of the mics unmuted at this point. That's just, as a discussion group, that's just the way we try to organize it. So I'll pause briefly, but always do feel free to jump right in. So that makes actually a lot of sense. And I won't go too much far into this because I'm a kind of a mathy guy and I don't want to be the pedant here, but couldn't the objective be trying to get to that deeper truth? Would that be harmful to set that as the objective, to say my goal is to get to the deeper truth? Or is that, how do you feel about that?
Harmful is a strong word. I don't think it's harmful. I think that, as I said in the passage you just read, your journey is a longer journey if you get too caught up in that. It just truly is. I've just, you know, I've been doing this for a lot of years and, you know, working on the Sarna panel and working on my own stuff. Because the answer, quote unquote, if there is to be an answer, usually exists more in the gray. So, like, for example, if you're looking for a certain outcome in any way, shape, or form, you're going to be looking for relief rather than looking for, I can sit in this discomfort. You know, clearly your discomfort for us would be around, I need something measurable. I need something scalable. I need something that I can see and understand, you know, I need a theory, I need an equation. And that just is not the way human beings work. You know, where it's, and I guess the thing I would worry about is if people did see, let's say, finding a deeper truth as an outcome, then they're not going to be present enough for the journey. The journey is the healing. The process is the healing. And this is all kind of vague stuff. So, I mean, I hope I'm making sense and not just getting too, you know, flighty about it.
But I find it fascinating. Yeah.
It's just, you know, let me see if I can come up with a quick example, because what you're asking is really important. And I can't tell you how often.
Important to me.
Yeah. And it's important to everybody. I can't tell you how often my clients are like sigh when I'm like, oh, I'm so proud of you. You're doing well. You know, you're making strides. And they're like, okay, but when? And like, the angst that surrounds that when really can keep people stuck, because, you know, finding truth is really more about surrendering than controlling.
Interesting. It seems like this would particularly be an issue with TMSers because, aside from any personality factors, which may be strong, in fact, that we're often driven, there's also the fact that we're in pain and we really want to
Yes.
do the work to get out of it. That I think that some therapists might struggle with unmotivated patients, but or clients, but certainly the people who I see at the forum don't seem unmotivated in the slightest. They
Oh
want to
no.
do that work.
Yep, most certainly. And all my clients want to do the work. And I feel proud of all of them. I've been successful with the fact that as long as you are in it and being honest with yourself and connecting with yourself on some level where you're trying to strive for more understanding, everybody's on the right path. Sometimes it's just harder, and depending on how much we were traumatized as children and how much we were told, sharing your feelings isn't right. I mean, there's so many things that we're told both consciously and unconsciously through people's actions when we grow. That's gonna also determine how speedy people can delve into that deeper truth.
Very interesting. Anyone else want to jump in? If not, I'm going to go to my next little bit. So this does seem, and that counts for you, Herbie, too. I'm going to resist the urge to call to put you on the spot because I think the best content will come when you jump in yourself. Does that sound like a deal, bud? All right, cool. So do jump in. Okay, so. I loved earlier on you were really emphasizing process. Process again is one of my favorite parts of the book, because yeah, it is a journey, not a destination. So the next thing I wanted to bring up is another wonderful passage. Absolutely favorite. These are my two favorite passages from the reading this week. Human suffering resides in the gaps that we create between seeing our deeper truths and letting action naturally flow from that. And the translation here is that humans beings don't seek change, regardless of how we are convinced otherwise by our outcome-addicted culture. We need only to open ourselves to seeing our truths. Once we can clearly see ourselves and our situations without judgment, change will occur effortlessly, as appropriate for each of our lives. This is truth to me, and it will be to you someday, don't worry. So with that, I think it's probably best to have you start by just telling us a little bit more about that.
I think that I thank you, by the way, for saying that it was your favorite passage. I really appreciate
I love
the
it. Yeah, it's
compliment.
great.
God, there's so much in that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to like pick out, okay, so when we I'm so tongue-tied here. Give me a minute, 'cause I what
Well, let
happened? Go ahead, go ahead.
or alternatively, I can jump in and tell you an angle that I'm particularly interested in with a paragraph.
Okay, yeah, because it's so packed there that I want to still stay focused. So tell me what it is that you're intrigued by
Right.
or you're questioning.
Just the notion that. So I do a lot of reading and trying to learn about therapy. Where does one turn? One turns to Wikipedia these days, sadly. And reading around on there, one of my favorite pages is the one called Insight or Insight-Oriented Psychotherapy, which really is this idea that the truth will set you free. And I guess what interested me about this is the notion that it's very much a strong insight perspective. The goal of therapy is to see that truth, and then once we see ourselves without judgment, change will occur effortlessly, as appropriate for each of our lives. I guess I'm kind of also intrigued about how that would work with someone who has. I mean, is that always true? Is that true for someone with PTSD? We'll start
Yes.
with PTSD. Would that be?
Let me say something that just occurred to me as you were speaking. One of the reasons that
Okay.
I wrote that particular passage that we're discussing is specifically because of my experiences on the Sarno panel. Because a lot of times somebody would raise their hand during the Q&A and they would say, okay, but, you know, I can't quit my job. You know, I can't not have my children living in my house. Like, you know, so they were kind of saying, you know, all these things that I'm becoming aware of that irritate me or that I can't stand about my life, I can't necessarily change them. So how am I supposed to heal? And that was a huge topic that used to be batted around quite a bit on the forum. And one of the things that Dr. Sarno would say often, and that I would always say when the question was directed at me, was, I don't think you need to change your life to heal from TMS. However, and this is also one of the reasons that people need to be very brave to do this work, because once we see ourselves clearly, really clearly, once we have that insight, as you were saying, Forrest, and we are able to connect and to not be afraid and to turn on that light in the dark room, people are petrified that they're going to see something that is so disturbing to them, they're not going to be able to blank, stay at their job, stay in their marriage, look at their kids the same. You know, people panic over that. What I try to explain to people is that tree makes a noise when it falls in the forest every day anyway, whether you are going to acknowledge it or not. If you hate your boss and he's rude and horrible to you every day, saying it out loud to yourself might get rid of your TMS, and it will not make it any different for you unless, and this is where we're going to get to this point, you come to a feeling because of the insight that you really aren't thriving at this job anymore. You come to a truth that you say, I actually would like to consider other options. I'm feeling really unappreciated. If that's the case, and if you are peaceful enough in the real understanding of your truth, change will naturally flow from that. You will, in that case, maybe potentially decide to be job hunting and change that job and change your life for the better. But you won't sit around and perseverate and be like, oh my God, well, oh my God, what am I going to do? It's just about allowing truth to inform our change. And that's why, you know, have it written on my arm. Be true to yourself and let your life unfold, because if you are true to yourself and you're able to find a deeper truth, you won't have to stress the changes. There's not that many decisions to be made. You'll either come to the deeper truth and say, okay, I see this for what it is. I'm comfortable in it. I can be here. I can make that work for myself. Or it's self-preservation for me to change this situation. And it is a natural flow that I've seen many times over in my own life, in my clients' lives, in people who approached me on the Sarno panel. And so that really speaks to what, you know, you were just saying.
Okay. Okay, so you don't have to change anything in particular. Well, okay, so
I mean,
what
is that making sense? Does anybody want to kind of comment?
Yeah, I do, Nicole.
Okay.
So what you're saying is, if, let's just say, it's a family member in your house that you live with, how do you accept that for what it is and move forward if you know that is part of your problem?
The best thing I can say about that is, I say this till I'm blue in the face, and I say this to my clients all the time, bring out your scales. What hurts versus what hurts worse. That really speaks more to the concept of when we are suffering, oftentimes we perseverate on the suffering. We focus on the suffering and we're like, how am I going to deal with this? How am I going to figure this out? Because we often think erroneously that there's some third option, which is that everything is peachy and that we don't have to worry about, you know, the situation. Whereas if there was someone, you know, I'm obviously you're talking about someone specific, but I'll just make up an example. If there was, let's say, a person caring for their elderly parent who had, let's say, Alzheimer's. Okay, so it's a very big imposition to their life and it's really taking its toll. They're on the scales, on the two scales would be either accept it for what it is because this is something that I have to deal with in my life right now, or see if I can save the money to have, you know, some sort of assisted living situation. I guess what I'm saying is there are only two options, what hurts and what hurts worse in life. And it's not to sound negative. It is to be realistic with oneself so you don't beat yourself up every day wishing and hoping for that third option, which is all of a sudden this person is, you know, better and no longer, you know, an imposition to me and I have no worries. You know, of course, we all know that doesn't happen magically. So for it to be a situation where you accept it for what it is only really possible if you understand what is the hurts and what is the hurts worse. And then letting, like we were just discussing, Forrest, change naturally flow from that. So if what you realize is it hurts worse to break the bank and spend all your money putting somebody up in a nursing home, well, then that's the lot in life right now that you have. And, you know, everything is just for now. But the point is that then life without TMS can occur because we're being honest with ourselves instead of torturing ourselves, you know, straining for a third option that doesn't exist. And I find this concept pretty much applies to every person that I've ever met.
Good, thank you.
You're welcome. Is that Joan?
Yes. Yes, Nicole, thanks.
That was very interesting. Herbie, did you have something you wanted to say?
Wow, that's pretty good. I was just thinking about the reactions. You know, the reactions people have towards these things. One's worse and one's worser. And if they still keep feeding the reactions, even though it's the truth, is that helpful?
Explain to me, Eric, a little bit more what you mean by reactions. I'm not
sure. It's usually anger. You know, I mean, people get angry because they're in situations. I mean, the situation might be an elderly mother, father. It might be a brother-in-law in my case. I went through that one time. It might be, you know, a child. It might be anything. It's just making them angry. When I say a child, I'm talking about usually a 30-year-old child still living at home.
Listen, it's but, child. It's always your child.
A 30-year-old child still living at home.
As my mother said to me when I was crying over my first baby because I couldn't nurse correctly, she said, well, get used to it because it starts now and it ends when you die.
Yeah.
And so,
okay.
She's on the line. She hears
The reactions towards, your reactions towards the issue. I mean, what do you tell your clients or your TMS patients about their reactions towards the issue? Just accept that this is, you know, this is anger producing, and it's going to keep on. But if you look at for what it really is, it'll lighten up eventually. Or what do you say?
Pretty much. I mean, what I say is, first of all, it's never helpful to not feel what you're feeling about a situation ever. If you feel angry, then you're going to need to feel angry about it. What I like to say to people is, you know, exert your anger in a meaningful way that's going to be productive and helpful for you. So instead of, you know, losing your temper on someone who's not even involved in the situation, but they're an easy target, I would take out a journal and give yourself a couple hours in some afternoon and go to a peaceful place and write, this fucking sucks, you know, whatever you have to do, and explain to yourself why you feel so angry and really allow yourself to feel it. It's amazing how that works. I'm telling you, anybody, it seems simplistic, but anyone who's really experienced it knows it's a huge burden off of you. And then sometimes the natural change that flows from that is something, like I'll give you an example. You're speaking of a brother-in-law. I have a client who has a mother-in-law who lives with him, and he can't stand her. and it's not something that's going to change anytime soon. And he told me one day, after we've had a lot of conversations about it, he's been working with me for a couple years, 3 years, he said...
I'm taking notes very carefully now, I want you to know.
Okay. And I think I might have said this before, so forgive me if I'm repeating myself. But he came into session about a couple months ago, and he had the biggest smile on his face. And I said, what? You know, and he said, I realized I don't have to like her. And I said... Right. Okay, you don't. And he said, it's been fabulous. He's like, I don't worry about liking her. I don't try to like her. I'm not rude to her. He said, but I don't like her and I don't have to. And this is a grown man and with kids. And I was like, correct. And he needed to come to his anger and to really feel how pissed he was that he was in this situation that he felt was impossible to exit, which it is right now. And he just needed to feel how angry he was and then to say to himself, I'm just not going to like her if I don't feel like it. And it was so healing for him. It sounds so simple, but it really helped him to this day. So to answer your question, Eric, you know, net, I think it is incredibly important to feel every feeling around any situation, but to feel it in a safe and productive way where you're not harming relationships that can't be mended.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is there any room in this for the idea of challenging one's thoughts?
Yeah.
Or reframing them?
Yes. Well, you know what I like to say, and I use this with my own journaling, okay? So sometimes I sit down to journal and I say to myself, how can I be the most truthful, the most honest? How can I connect with myself in the way that I want to right now? Because I don't have all that much time or, you know, whatever it is. And I always say, how do you feel? Just how do you feel right now? What, you know, do you feel a little chilly? Do you feel angry? Do you feel sad? Do you feel like you could cry if you had the space? Like, you know, how do you feel? What's happening right this very second? You know, I'm looking down at my dog and I'm feeling love, or I'm looking down at my dog and I'm feeling conflict because she's shit in the house today. You know, whatever it is, it brings you to the present and it helps you to connect with yourself. And then if it's appropriate between you and yourself to challenge your thoughts, then that is going to naturally come. I think what you're struggling with, Forrest, is that you're looking for more of a concrete answer. Even within each question, you want an outcome. And this is, you're very brave to put yourself on the chopping block, and I appreciate what you're doing, because you really are personifying what I said about in the book. We all want them. we want them. We want to feel better. You know, we want to be done. We want to just let the healing begin. And and that's very human. But really, the answer comes back to the same thing. You're doing it. You're doing it right now as you're talking to me. You're doing it every time you pick up a journal. You're doing it every time, you know, you do whatever it is that soothes and heals you. And if challenging your thoughts is part of that, then that's part of that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that was an affirmation for challenging thoughts at the end. Sorry for simplifying.
Yes. He's like, so I can challenge them, right?
I'm very black and white. I'm a simple man.
And the answer is there is no wrong answer. That's the answer. There is no wrong answer. Yeah. It's about being present with yourself and not hiding from things that arise that you don't want to think about because it's inconvenient to think about them.
Okay. Interesting. One thing which I think could be potentially interesting, and I hope this isn't far afield, but this is what arose in my head. So we're going to run with it for a moment. Could you define what psychodynamic means?
Sure.
It's a piece of language I'd love to have available in the conversations that we have on the forum. Mm-hmm. And I guess I think of your approach as fairly psychodynamic. And well, I'd love to hear what psychodynamic is first and then see if you agree with that.
Psychodynamic is just, it's a simple definition. It's what psychoanalytic used to be in Freud and Jung's time. And it's grown into being the school of thought that it's important to delve back into our history. It's important to understand our motivations based on childhood. It is the closest thing in modern day psychotherapy to psychoanalysis, because people don't really do much psychoanalysis anymore because we've evolved. So it's really like, if you want to understand it, the best way for me to explain it is compare it against another paradigm. So let's say cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, is about, let's say, desensitization or schemas, and so helping people understand their patterns. That's all. If you're going to go straight CBT, your pattern is being challenged on the surface, on the higher truth, okay?
And right. There's not very much, truth.
I mean, what psychodynamic, the reason that you find me very psychodynamic is because I truly do believe in it quite a bit. And I was also trained very clinically in my MSW program. But basically, what I believe is cognitive behavioral therapy has its place. Challenging our patterns is certainly important. But in my opinion, especially coming as a TMS therapist, if we don't understand why how we got here or why we are this way or what deficit our childhoods, you know, left us, in what space, it's only going to heal you to a certain point. It's like putting a Band-Aid on. So, you know, psychodynamic is just a school of thought, a paradigm in psychotherapy that believes that it is important to look to your past and to your motivations based on how you were raised and what challenges you had to overcome.
Interesting.
Does that answer the question in terms of your curiosity?
Interesting. Okay, I mean, the reason that I kind of indulged myself with that is we are getting near the end of the book. And if, oh, yeah. Loved it. yes, it is. That is helpful. The reason that I bring it up to kind of really answer your question is that we are getting near the end of the book. And one thing I would love to do is start applying some of the ideas. And I mentioned earlier in this call that I have done a lot of therapy in my life, starting when I was 9. And I'm going to say, I know this is like a classic bad thing. It's not supposed to happen when you're, I mean, this is the worst thing. The worst thing that can happen is if you have a bad ending to a therapy session, to a relationship with a therapist. And I'll say that I've had.
You mean the ending like for the whole relationship or just that hour?
The whole relationship.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, what I was, and I've had that, not with any individual, just I felt like, oh gosh, this psychodynamic stuff is getting me down. And so I think that when you hear the goal oriented, there's like years of stuff in there. One could get all psychodynamic and transferency and stuff like that on my response to those two paragraphs that I opened with. So I just kind of wanted to open up that maybe later on, I'm going to want to solicit other people to say, hey, do you want to come up and do some actual work on the call? You have this this wonderful opportunity to work with Nicole. And I said, well, I'm not much of a leader if I won't do that myself, if I don't have the courage to put my own self first and my own neuroses first and my own issues.
Yeah.
So
I appreciate your bravery, because that's not easy.
Yeah. In the context of that. So yeah, perhaps we can do that. But for now, as the moderator, as the facilitator, if I'm going to put that hat on instead of the participant hat, let's keep on getting through the chapter. But we can talk about that later, and I hope people will consider that opportunity, and perhaps I will as well. Does anyone else have any questions they want to bring up? Any stuff? All right. So one thing you talk about is about how you had to start with the easy stuff. In some sense, you had to start with the tapes. Do you want to, why is that important?
I think it's more about becoming comfortable with the process of seeking truth. And it's kind of exactly what I was just speaking to before when I say, if you really want to start connecting with yourself and you're kind of having trouble, your pen is sitting there in your hand and you're saying, well, what am I going to write? You can start with, you know, I feel tired today. Why am I so tired? You know, I'm just saying, like, you know, embody the experience. So that's why starting with the quote unquote easy stuff helps, because it doesn't feel so threatening. You know, like when I explained the whole situation, the epiphany I had about my daughter at the time, I had to start with, parenting is hard, I'm sleep deprived, I'm exhausted, I'm irritable, I don't like this side of myself. And so, like, I just had to ease into it. I wasn't gonna come to the depth of realization that I eventually did without allowing myself the permission to be just like every other overworked mom, and then and then delving deeper and deeper into, wait, you know, it feels like it's more than that. Wait, it feels like it's more than that. And just having the courage and the patience with yourself to go down that bunny trail.
Gotcha. You say you need to be safe. You need to either write or say in general the easy stuff, and then you can do that. And we've already talked about what essentially my next question was about needing to confront anyone who has damaged you in the sense that you don't. When you're ready, you will take that step. So it moves on. So we've wrapped up the notes that I had for chapter 8 and 8.5. For chapter 8. Moving on to chapter 8.5, this is about the idea of a truth group, something that a patient of yours, Liz, suggested as a way to, as an option for people who want to explore their truth, want to go something beyond just pen and paper, but maybe therapy for whatever reason isn't an option or isn't an ideal option. You want to tell us about how a truth group works?
I would, and actually, Forrest, this also speaks to the question that we were posing right before we started the recording, when we said we're going to wait till the
recording. Oh, yes, I'm sorry, yeah. I forgot about that one. Yeah, good.
So I can actually address both of those in this answer. So essentially, the reason that I wrote that chapter is because Liz was a great help in helping me edit the book. And one of the things, and she'd been working with me since, you know, day one, basically, that I had my practice here. And she said, but what about the others? What about people that can't pay the money for a therapist? Or what about people who can't find specifically a TMS therapist, which speaks to the question that we were discussing before we began the recording. And, you know, what if finances are an issue? And I was racking my brain for a way in which I felt people could just not be so alone in this process. And it just felt like a good thing to mention that it's kind of just like a psychotherapeutic book club. Like, because, you know, just like you say, Forrest, when you introduce this session every week, that, you know, this is not, we're not treating a medical condition here. This is not psychoanalysis. This is a supportive group of people who are coming together to discuss the theories in this book that could be helpful to everyone, right? So the reason that I thought of truth groups is I thought, listen, we bitch and moan to our friends all the time, okay? And we talk about the easy stuff, the surface stuff all the time. But if there were a few like-minded people that, you know, would read the book together, maybe like the way we're doing it, little by little, or complete it like a normal book club and then come back together. If I am willing and brave enough to be really raw and share, maybe you would be, and you would be, and you would be, and they could have, you know, like you said, it wouldn't be a psychotherapeutic group because there wouldn't be a moderator and there'd be no way for it to be boundary, you know, sound like there's no way you can't always know if other people are going to, you know, share your secrets or know that they won't. So it really would have to be, something that you took on faith. But see, I believe that once one person shares so beautifully and so openly and inspires another person to do so, confidentiality doesn't become a problem anymore because everybody's out there, you know, and everyone's, it's creating a support group around the theories that I discuss in the book. And I just, it's my hope for people. You know, I, you know how I feel. I want to help everyone in the world. I can't, you know, I can't personally help everyone in the world, but people can help one another. And if we can just collectively as a society be more open to our vulnerabilities and the shame that we carry. That's why I'm such a huge Brené Brown fan, because she's making vulnerability, you know, a romantic word. She's making people understand that we thrive in our vulnerability, and that's such TMS work. You know, the reason that you guys like this book is because you guys are all suffering, because we're all suffering in some fashion, and I'm willing to say, yeah, and it's really hard, and look how I suffered. And I think that would be so beneficial for people to do for one another.
Interesting. I wonder if there's any role that we could have in helping organize something like that. Maybe helping people get together. Maybe we can talk about that afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to brainstorm with you, Forrest, about things like that, because maybe we could find a way that it was safe for people, and I could maybe like come and be like a guest, you know, member at different groups. You know, we could figure it. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, that sounds good. All right, so that actually does wrap up the questions that I had prepared. I do have a couple others that I can ask since we do have a bit more time, but I thought I'd throw the doors open to any members of our call who might want to jump in and ask a question or direct the conversation, and if not, I'll take it away.
Come on, people.
It's tough. You know, sometimes you just...
I'm just waiting on somebody else to bring a question. One thing I will say, you know, is a lot of this is deep. You know, I mean, it's really deep. And you bring about, and we talk about, you know, getting in there and talking about the deeper stuff and bringing it up. And as you know, Nicole, as you know, Forrest, there's some things that people just ain't going to bring up. They will, maybe one-on-one to a therapist or somebody like they believe in their husband or their wife. They might tell them their deep, dark secret. But some people just ain't going to come out and say it. You know, like even on the phone calls here, a lot of times it's hard to even ponder bringing up anything. And a lot of times people don't even know what it is that's boiling on the inside. And that's what you want them to, you know, start journaling for so they can dig a little deeper and dig a little deeper until they get there, right? So they can start understanding what those deep, you know, those deep truths are, you know. And one of the things I've always called those deep truths is beliefs that people, a lot of people that has inner beliefs, but they got some beliefs that they don't even know that they're entertaining. They got beliefs that from childhood, you know, that just got created. It's been there all their life. They don't even know it's there. But the reason the journal is so that you know what your beliefs are, so that you know what, you know, what you're entertaining. What is those thoughts way back in the back of your head that you don't even know that's just running your life, that you don't even know that's even there, you know?
Yeah.
And I believe that's why a lot of times people don't have anything. They get quite kind of quiet because they're like, I know there's something, you know, but, you know, they just ain't got enough down into those deep truths that you keep talking about, those beliefs that are limiting them.
Yeah, and I want to say that that's why, when you just said before, people don't want to come out and say it, that's why journal speak is such a beautiful concept, because you're not hurting anybody, but you're opening yourself up to yourself, and you're understanding yourself better. And when you get more comfortable with yourself, there's a good possibility that you would want to open up with like-minded peers, because you would want to gain more support and you would want to give support, which I know so many of you do all the time on the forum, you know, through the message boards and what have you. So, I think that it's incredibly hard. And I tell this to people all the time. This is the hardest path. This is the hardest work. It's so much easier to take a pill or have a surgery. And when I say easier, it's of course in quotes, because it's not easy to be addicted to something, and it's not easy to have a surgery because it's horrible and you have to recover and it probably won't help you anyway. But people need to understand that this is the reason you get, like, it's almost like you get what you pay for. What you give in your own energy to heal yourself and to be present with yourself and to journal and to do whatever you need to do, and to be brave, will lead to enduring healing. And that is the best prize of all. Anything that endures, that's positive in our lives. And so that is why, you know, it's very worthwhile, the work. And it's so hard. I mean, I struggle with it myself, and I always will. And for me to say that is brave, because I wrote the book on it, and I still struggle. And I want people to know that, because I never want anyone to feel alone. I tell all of my clients that I still have to journal, you know, from time to time, and really get involved in thinking about things that make me feel a lot of pain and it's the human condition. So it kind of brings us back to what hurts us versus what hurts worse. Once you realize that it hurts worse to hide from yourself, it makes it more palatable to actually do this incredibly difficult work.
Yeah, and you know, I'm going to take it a little off to another road here. You got some people. That's great. Thank you, Nicole. But you got some people, and they'll go 2, 3, 4, 5 months, 6 months, and they're still trying to figure out, you know, what they're supposed to be doing. They're still trying to figure out how to do this TMS healing. And now it's very rare that you know, within 2 or 3 months, they usually catch on. And when I talk to them like a TMS wiki, I'll talk to them and I'll call it that the first phase. You know, they got to get it in their head what it is, what's going on, before they can even start. You know, but there's some people that 4, 5, 6 months down the road, they're still trying to figure out what's going on.
Eric,
you know, and
some people 3, 4, 5 years down the road that are still trying to figure out what's going on.
And
there's no shame in that, but I want to just say, to make sure people understand, if you are one of those people, that everything operates under the hurts versus hurts worse umbrella, okay? So, Eric, to kind of answer that question a little bit, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, so you can just keep going when I
say something. No, thank you. You're doing great. You're doing great.
Okay, I want to say real quick, because I want to, and it's nothing against what you said. I just want anyone who's listening who's in that group of 3, 4, 5, 6 years, 10 years, not to feel badly about it. And I want to say that if you're still suffering with TMS 3, 4, 5, or 6 years down the road, it obviously hurts worse for you to look at your issues. And this is something that people need to understand. It's kind of like, I think I might have mentioned this, but I have a client who is morbidly obese, and I worked with him for Dr. Sarno referred him into my practice when I was in Westchester, and I worked with him for a couple of years, and he complained every session how he hated being fat and how it made him miserable, and we talked and talked and talked about it, and finally a few months in I said, you don't hate it that much. And he's like, what are you talking about? I hate it. And I'm like, you hate it, I understand, but you don't hate it that much, or else it would hurt worse to be overweight and you would be doing something about it. And I think that people need to be able to accept themselves for that without judgment. You know, maybe it hurts worse to look at your issues. Maybe you're one of those people, not you, Eric, but, you know, ubiquitous you. And I just think that that's really what it comes down to. I mean, I'll tell you something about myself. Nothing hurts worse than hiding from my own feelings. I'm not always good about doing the work that I know I need to do, but I acknowledge that I'm hurting. I always say, you know, just do it. You know, if you could have just done it 3 months ago, you'd probably be done by now with whatever, you know. And I'm stubborn and I'm, you know, defiant, and just like I was, not defiant, but, you know, I push back. That's my personality. But at the same time, I always am honest with myself, which is, if I see myself not doing the work, obviously it hurts worse to do the work for me that day. And so it's just about accepting that actually can make a really big difference in people's therapy, because people really struggle and then they blame themselves, or they say, well, it's not really TMS, and those things aren't helpful. It's much more helpful to be like, obviously I can't handle this right now, so, you know, I'm going to do what I need to do to get through the day. And that sometimes is the right answer for that day, for that person.
Okay. So it's the deeper stuff sometimes. Like you said, I mean, everybody's different.
At each person's pace.
And each person's what?
Each person's pace. You know, everyone needs to go at own pace for this, because this is something that can't be forced. You know, it precisely can't be forced, like we were talking about earlier.
Well, like this, okay, on the same issue, and on another hand a little bit, the personality. You know, you got your childhood, you got current issues, and then you got personality traits. And, you know, you can talk to some people, whether you're talking to them on TMS Wiki or just being a friend over the phone or whatever, or like a brother, sister, or whoever, and or your patients or whatever. But for me, anyway, this is where it goes. I'm sitting there, and And like this person might have been doing it for 3 or 4 months, you know, learning about it. And I can clearly tell just their personality trait. Maybe a personality trait, I don't, you can name one of the emotions, okay? Frightened to do something, whatever it might be, I don't know. But I'm telling them clearly what it is. I'm clearly telling them what it is. And they say, yeah, but, and then they go to something else. And then I clearly tell them what it is. And they say, yeah, but, and they go to something else. Because it's like they're not hearing what I'm saying. It's sort of something like I read out of a book one time. But it's true.
Okay.
So that is that's basically the same thing. The what now? Is that basically the same thing what you just said, or is it something different? You're trying to ignore something?
I'm kind of confused as to how it would be the same thing. I'm sorry. You're saying that what I'm hearing you say, Eric, is that it's frustrating for you if you tried to express yourself to somebody or express yourself in terms of helping them or guiding them, and then they're saying, yeah, but, and basically negating what you're saying. Is that what you're trying to express?
No, it's not actually frustrating to me because I understand what's happening, but what's going on is it's like it's frustrating to them that I keep telling them something that's so simple. You know, I'm saying, well, it's because you're worried about it and you got your mind focused on it and you're fearing it that's creating, you know, the pain to keep staying there is one of the ways I'll tell people if a pain keeps staying there, like somewhere in the body. And I'll tell them if they keep fearing it, focusing on it, talking about it all day long, it just keeps it there. And they'll say, yeah, but, you know? And I'm like, well, did you not
all
hear
right,
that
yeah, part? I understand what you're saying. And, yeah, it is a very similar concept because basically what it's saying is that person that you're talking to, obviously it hurts worse for them to deal with themselves at that time. That's, you know, the best thing I can imagine would be happening.
Same thing.
And so, you know, maybe it's just about, I mean, I always say it's about patience and kindness for oneself.
Good. Well, that answered a lot, too, and I'm sure that helped a lot of people. I really appreciate that.
Sure.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I like the part where it's something like you, I think you wrote this, like, just skimming won't do it. Just skimming won't do it. And some people, they'll say, like, I've read the book. I read the book. And you'll say, well, you know, well, how long did it take you to read the book? And they read it in a day or two, you know? And this is clearly something you need to really sit down and take your time with, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, I want no one to ever judge themselves. So if it's something, like, let's say they do, like, for example, there's a woman who approached me about a year ago, right when I, a little more recently, but pretty much right when I put the book out. And she was freaking out. I mean, she approached me, I was in a restaurant, and she was like, we hardly even knew each other, but she kind of knew who I was, and she was so excited about the book, recommending it to everybody. And then she stopped reading about 6 or 7 chapters in because she felt a mental block. Like, she just couldn't deal with herself, and she was just, she wasn't ready. And I remember she was kind of like scared to talk to me about it because she had been so enthusiastic. And I was like, it's okay. You know, I mean, that's the thing that I want to always instill in any conversation I have, which it's okay. It's okay if you stop reading. It's okay if you need to pick it up a month later. It's okay if you're not ready to look at anything. You know, I have friends who literally have said, I can't read your book, Nicole. I feel terrible, but I just can't look at my truths right now. And I'm like, then okay. Then that's how you feel. You know, then that's what you need right now. And then I appreciate that. I respect that.
Awesome. Just, my main point is as long as people can start to understand what their deeper truths are, I mean, you know, a lot of people don't even know. And you talk about it in journal speak, in your journal speak chapters, and you're expanding on it more and more as we go, and I appreciate it. And I hope a lot of people listen to these programs because this is really going to help them. So thank you a lot.
Can I ask a question, Nicole?
Jump on in.
You really have to know what this irritating or anger or whatever emotion that I think is bothering me may not. A doctor had told me, Dr. Guads in New Jersey, had said that issue that I think is bothering me may not really be the one, since I wasn't making progress.
Hold on. Guys, I just got totally booted off this meeting, and now I can't get my camera back. One sec. Forrest, are you there?
I sure am.
What happened for me just as I finished answering that question is you froze, and then my whole fuse shut off.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so I don't know how to get it back now because it says start broadcasting your camera, and I keep saying start, and it's not doing it.
Well, since we're near the end, I would just ignore the camera because I can hear you just fine.
Okay. Well, So whatever question anybody just asked, I missed that because I was kicked off.
Joan, want to say it again?
I want to make it short. A doctor had told me that I wasn't making progress because the issue that I thought was bothering me may not be the issue at all. It may be something else.
So she wasn't making progress.
How would a doctor know how you're feeling better than you know how you're feeling?
Joan?
Do you get the question, like what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, no, Forrest, I don't know, I'm so disoriented because my whole thing just like is like...
Right. Yeah,
Forrest, do you understand what I mean?
I think I do. So it sounds like, so you go to Dr. Gwozd and you say, hey, I think I know what it is that's bugging me. I think I know where my anger is coming from.
Right.
And he's great. And then you don't get better. And you're like, I don't feel any better. And Dr. Gwozd is like, well, maybe what you thought was the truth wasn't really the deeper.
Exactly.
And that's a really good insight for, I guess what I'm saying is that Dr. Sarno always said, and Joan, I know that you've been to the panels, if you're still suffering, you have more work to do. And that's essentially what I hear that doctor saying, I guess, and that's in that situation, which is, you know, if you have decided that you nailed it, you got it all down pat and you're still suffering, there's more digging to be done. And that's, you know, it's sometimes really hard to hear that. But I think that's it's the truth for a lot of people.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Great. Okay, so I'm going to fit one. Do you have time for one last question?
I do. I would like, can you bear with me so I can just restart this real quick? Because it's like my computer's freaking out. I'll be right back.
All right. Does anyone else want to jump in while she's doing that? Any thoughts you want to say or just comments or anything at all?
This is AJ. I guess I'll say something. It's my first time calling. I've been doing a lot of journaling over the last week or so, and the biggest thing that I took away here, and it was a simple statement, but allowing myself to feel my feelings. I've been writing them down, and I've been very methodical about getting all that stuff down, but I didn't take the time to actually feel those feelings. So I'm going to give that a shot and see how that goes for me.
That is a good.
All right, I'm back if you wanted to ask one more question for us.
Yes, indeed. So my final question is, I guess I'm kind of hung up on the insight thing. And so my self-indulgent question is, what about if you have like an inner bully? So you talked about how things can naturally unfold and here again, I'm an audience member rather than a facilitator here. But you talked about how things naturally unfold. Suppose you have an inner bully. How do things naturally unfold? Because sometimes I have an inner bully, and I know that I have an inner bully, and I kind of recognize the inner bully, but it feels like it takes a while of kind of being in relationship with the inner bully to kind of gain the upper hand, to get to the point where the inner bully doesn't hurt you anymore. Is that part of the natural process of unfolding? And did you say that you can't hear me?
I can hear you. I hear some background noise, like someone needs to be muted, but I hear you. You know, I hear everything.
Oh, that's probably me. I'm on my phone.
No, that's cool. Yeah, that's fine. Here's what I have to say about the inner bully. That was a good look for you. You were like a pirate.
I briefly had.
Go ahead. Yeah, no, I hear you. And what I want to tell you is everyone has an inner bully. Okay. There's a lot of different names for it. But when I did a really interesting continuing ed last year at Kripalu Center called Soma Soul, it was about mind-body healing. And one of the things that was emphasized a lot is something that Daniel Levin, who did the series that I attended, said was a victimizer energy. That's what he called it, your victimizer energy. So, for example, you might call it inner bully, where it's like, you know, I'm going to go and, you know, buy myself that new pair of running shoes. And, like, the victimizer energy would come in and say, you don't deserve that. You shouldn't spend money on yourself. Look at all the things. Like, the victimizer energy is the thing that shuts you down when you try to find some goodness for yourself. Like, if, or you could say, I'm proud of myself because of A, B, or C. And the victimizer energy comes in and says, yeah, but you messed that up. That wasn't perfect. And it's usually having to do with our upbringings. My victimizer energy is 100% my dad. He, you know,
right.
I was supposed to be perfect all the time. So I could never attain anything as far as I was concerned. I was always a failure because perfection is unattainable. And I still struggle with that to this very day. And so what I'm hearing you say, Forrest, and what I want to acknowledge is this inner bully. You're saying, you know, will things naturally unfold? Yes, because if you can get deep into where that voice comes from, whose voice that actually is in your life, and come to peace with the way that voice has hurt you, and get, you know, and not just say, oh, I have to be over this. It's about having, you know, compassion and patience and kindness for yourself in that process. And it's a process like everything else. It takes time.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. All right. Well, that is it for me.
My mom said something. Yeah, Mom?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah?
Sure
can. Can you hear me, Forrest?
Indeed I do.
Oh, good. I was just watching this whole thing, and I have a little story that I think it's a personal story, and I think it helps providing insight for this conversation that we were talking about.
Okay.
And that is...
Wonderful.
A long time ago, when you were a little girl, I had a problem with my mother because she decided that she knew what was best for how to raise you. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be in control of that. I did not want her to be in control of that. And we got into quite a few arguments about, you know, what should you eat or how much you should eat or what you should, you know, how you should be brought up.
My Nana was a member of the Clean Plate Club, for people who are wondering what that meant. You know, it was eat it all or you're not allowed to leave the table. So that's what my mom's referring to.
My mother had very inflexible views about what a child should eat and how a child should dress and how a child should speak, whatever. And we used to get into arguments about it where I said, I am bringing her up my way, and it's not the way you brought me up. And we really got into some very unhappy arguments about that. And I probably felt, talk about an inner bully. I mean, I was totally guilt-ridden about it because I didn't like to have that relationship with my mother. And when I thought about it, and it was right in the middle of a phone call where she had called me and asked me, I forget what the topic was, but it had to do with you, and it had to do with something that she was criticizing that I didn't do right. And all of a sudden, in the middle of arguing with her, I got this huge insight, and that was that she loves me, and she loves you, and she only wants the best for both of us.
Right.
And right in the middle of the conversation, I said, Ma, I just got something. A light bulb just went on in my head. And she said, what was that? And I said, you love Nicole as much as I do, and you love me because I'm your daughter, and that relationship is never going to change. And I said, and you want what's best for us, and you think that you're the only one who knows what's best for us. So I get it. I get it. Why you won't leave us alone.
Was she able to hear that?
Oh, are you kidding? she said, "That's absolutely right." And we both started to cry. And it was just...
You never told me that story, Mom.
I know. It was such... I mean, it was such... I remember that phone call. I remember where I was standing and the phone I was holding. And sometimes, you know, when you least expect it, if you really think about what is going on here, why am I having this difficult relationship with my mother? I mean, we always used to fight about things because that was the nature of it. But it was never this deep and hurtful because... This was about something, you know, that was my whole life, which was bringing you up and being a mother to you. And as soon as I said that, it kind of gave us both the freedom to be exactly the way we were.
Right.
Because we both knew that we were coming from a very good place, a place of love and not a place of bullying or controlling. And it was a huge, huge insight.
Yeah, and that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was a wonderful moment, and it really pretty much changed our whole relationship towards, you know, the philosophy of bringing up children and everything like that. And I just want to say about your truth groups, a lot of times if a few people can get together and really be vulnerable, and what your guest was saying about sometimes you don't know what it is that you're looking for or what the actual insight's going to be that's going to be the eye-opener for you, just by hearing somebody else tell something,
right,
it could awake something in you or awake an insight in you that maybe you couldn't discover it just by yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be my hope.
Well, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Thanks, Mom.
Thanks for sharing. So I mean, one thing that I thought about is I could set up who knows if it'll go anywhere, but I could set up a little web address. It'll be go.tmswiki.org/truthgroups. And it'll point to, I don't know, a discussion forum thread, and then maybe anyone who's listening who wants to can check it out and go there. We won't be able to set it up until tomorrow. But as of 9:24, assuming that Nicole, do you like that idea?
Place where people can use to like connect. Yeah, I love it. I love it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would probably be for like phone-based stuff. But anyway, and we couldn't organize it or monitor it or anything like that. But at least we can provide a place for getting in touch.
Cool.
Well, that's got to wrap up our show because it's 10:12.
Time for bed.
Thanks so much. Time for bed.
Thank
indeed.
You,
thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome. It's always my pleasure. Say goodbye to Mickey.
Goodbye, Mickey. The therapy dog.
She's such a tired dog. She's so sleepy. All right, guys. So Forrest, I'm going to sign off, and I will see you guys next Tuesday.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Sorry for the geeky Lord of the Rings reference, but we were briefly at 14. I thought that there were 13 of us, and I realized that no, we had 14, and she was like our hobbit. It's probably going to go over everyone's head, but there you go.
Like
the lucky number 14. There
look
we go.
At well,
thank
at
you.
All right. Bye, guys.
Have a good week.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yep, bye.